On today's show, Team USA stays undefeated in tune-up games. Dan and I help the NBA with expansion ideas, and we check in on all the news and notes and our guys from Summer League. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome to No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. And with me, as always, it is not Rasheed Wallace. It is senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. It's my man. It's your man. It's everyone's man. It's Dan Devine. What is up, buddy?
Jake, I feel real limber right now, not because of the muscle relaxers, but because I just spent like an hour dancing on camera, which sounds like there a bit, but is the truth. We were doing some troubleshooting on cameras. I was dancing a bunch. I had some like arm movements going. I was doing some voguing. There was a lot happening here, and there was no actual music, unlike our vibe check segment, which will not be happening this week. I just had to provide the music in my head. So I'm in a weird headspace, Jake. How are you doing?
I slept for about 10 hours last night. After not sleeping for maybe more than 4 hours for about almost a full week in Las Vegas. The time zone, look, I've realized going to Vegas now for work from the East Coast, if there's like a day one, which, you know, in-season tournament, the day one was Thursday, Vegas, Summer League, the in-season, the games start on Friday. I need a day zero. I need to fly in early, go to bed early. And due to some restraints this year, I was unable to do that. But it's fine. We survived. My voice sounds as it would after what I went through. But all positive things.
I was going to say, you actually sound like you sound. So whatever bounce back, procedure you've been going through, I don't know if you've been hydrating, if there's some honey and lemon going on there. Whatever it's going honey. On, yeah. I'm in my
future in-laws home and my lady's mom's office where I have a coaster that says, I never realize how much I swear until I shut the fuck up. We've got a spray the away, whatever the hell this is. Let's see. When you're irritated, pissed off, annoyed, tired, peeved, frustrated, enraged with an overall bad attitude, aromatherapy. So that's not my secret sauce on how I'm getting through today's show.
If we're being frank, Jake, it sounds like something that I need more than you. It feels like it would be of more benefit on this side of the microphone usually.
I think so. But also, what helped me transition out of Vegas was I had a nice long stay at the Amex Lounge where I was able to watch USA and Serbia, which is
speaking
item one.
Speaking of transitions, incredible work by this professional broadcaster.
Which is item one of our opening segment, Five Out, where we tackle five stories from around the NBA world. And there were many an NBA player on the court in Abu Dhabi yesterday, Thursday, tipping off at noon Eastern. Of all of them, Steph Curry had a game-high 24 points in 21 minutes, 18 in the first half. It was so funny. Every time they cut back from commercial, the broadcast just kept showing Steph Curry highlights because he was just in the full Steph flamethrower mode. And USA now up 3-0, or they're 3-0 in their tune-up games. Two more coming in London. They play South Sudan, Royal Ivy's South Sudan team, who, like Serbia, will also be in Group C with Team USA when the Olympics begin. And then they'll play Germany, who, of course, beat Team USA in the semifinals when I was there at the FIBA World Cup en route to gold. And that will be that. But I think just two things off of Steph going off that I noticed from the airport lounge on my beautiful, super wide company laptop screen. Number one, they're both screen things that stood out to me. By screen, I mean pics, not my super big screen. LeBron and Steph running pick and roll with LeBron as the role man is like Steph and Draymond on, shooting up someone with Compound V. That's a That's a Amazon Prime The Boys reference. There was only one play in the second quarter that really stands out where it was on the right wing and LeBron rolls and he just slammed a bounce pass into Embiid and he found Drew on one. Like, if that's going to end up being the pet action in crunch time or whatever for Team USA, I don't know how anyone's going to be able to stop that combination is basically all I'm trying to say.
No, it's totally the whole premise of when Steph and Draymond work together is like Draymond's really good at reading the floor and making plays out of the middle of the floor. Well, you know who's pretty good at that too? It turns out it's LeBron James. The idea that you get these two guys, and the wildest thing so far in the early running of these tune-up games is the starting lineup that features LeBron James and Stephen Curry with Joel Embiid and insert two teammates here is the weaker group on Team USA's lineups because this was a close game. You noted it in the Slack when we were talking yesterday. Tie game after the first quarter. Serbia up, I think, 4 minutes or so into the second quarter.
They took about like a 6-point lead, yeah.
Yeah, and Steph rips off like 9 points in less than a minute. Kicks off that 4-point play where he hits the three and then gets fouled on the way down. But then once that happened, that second unit comes in and it's Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, Anthony Edwards, and yesterday Derek White got into the mix, and Devin Booker, who was in the starting lineup for the first couple of games, now back on the bench. Like,
Bam, there's three just threes.
And Bam Adebayo shooting the three. Anthony Davis clamping down Nikola Jokic. Doesn't happen all that often in NBA play, but happened quite a bit in the second quarter there. I think the total run between the end of the second quarter and the first few minutes of the third quarter was 31-5 USA. And when you can go to the bench and it's that line change comes in, that size, all that length, all that athleticism and physicality, that's the way that Team USA seems like they're going to be able to turn on the jets and run away from teams. 5 minutes of just lockdown defense that they can run off of, and being able, it's funny that mix of maybe Joel Embiid has not played as well as Anthony Davis or Bam Adebayo, but being able to throw AD and Bam at teams seems like it's a way to completely defang any offense USA is going to face.
For sure. Just a quick note on Embiid. That was the other thing I was going to mention. He had one terrible flop trying to draw a foul on Jokic.
Yeah, that was ugly.
And he has not looked in peak conditioning, but I noticed it a bit in the Knicks series. He's become such a willing and effective screener so far out from the basket for Tyrese Maxey after, I think there was some tension, let's say, in just figuring out how to iron out the pick and roll partnership with James Harden. So to see him setting these screens at like 40 feet from the basket for Steph is just like, how the hell do you get around that man that far away from the basket? That's going to be a hell of a challenge for other teams. But to item two, to keep it moving here on Five Out, Kyrie, it was reported earlier this week, has undergone surgery for a broken left hand. We hope he has a speedy recovery because the Dallas Mavericks certainly need someone to help alleviate Luka Doncic's pressure, and they will have plenty of pressure after going out and going and getting Klay Thompson and Najee Marshall and continuing to try to build this thing forward after a finals appearance and two Western Conference finals appearances in 3 years. Starting off the season, I think, with momentum will be important for that club.
Yeah, Tim McMahon of ESPN reported that while the Mavericks didn't provide a timetable for Kyrie to be cleared to return to basketball activity, there's some optimism that he'll be able to get back into, be able to participate by training camp. So 2.5 months there, and that really remains to be seen. But yeah, the West has continued to rise around them. Oklahoma City, who they knocked off in the second round, only got better, adding Alex Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein. You're going to get Memphis back in the mix. You've got Minnesota still there. Like there's going to be a ton of talent still at the top there. Starting off slow would put them behind the eight ball and maybe make it more difficult for them to develop the kind of rhythm, chemistry, cohesion that you need when you're importing such a big piece like Klay Thompson. So, but the optimism seems to be the order of the day. So we'll see if Kyrie's able to get out there and be able to get going at the start of camp. Dallas is still going to be certainly a team to keep an eye on in that mix.
Item three on the wing of our five out opening segment, Gary Trent is joining with Milwaukee, although this should be that Damian Lillard recruits another minimum wing to the Bucks. Because Gary Trent, I would surmise, will slide right into the Malik Beasley minimum salary, quote unquote, two-way guy that they need to fill the shoes that Malik filled that Grayson Allen left behind as he exited in the massive Drew Holiday, Damian Lillard, three-team trade with Phoenix. My first reaction to this was definitely about the salary cap, you know, ramifications of this and how Gary Trent is another wing that was making, he's one wing that was making significantly above the mid-level, expected to do that, and now ends up on the minimum in this new landscape that we will definitely talk more about, the second apron and the CBA and all that type of stuff further in the show. But I think also just in the interest of time and making this move and keep it succinct, I think Gary Trent Jr., we haven't really seen much of him the last couple of years because he's been on this Raptors team that's been floundering and he's had his own injury stuff. But just that first blush in a better, healthier situation, I think he is a better player on both sides of the ball than Malik Beasley. And I think he will be potentially a really welcomed addition, particularly on the defensive side of things. This guy who was picking up 94 feet at, the bubble back when Yusuf Nurkic was one of the best five centers in the NBA for like 10 days. And that's probably the stuff that Dame remembers and what the Bucks are hoping he will be able to replicate on a team that needed someone like this. Is a big win for the Bucks in terms of not having so much optionality to get better.
The fact that the Bucks walked into the postseason with really out of gas, Giannis was hurt. Dame got hurt in the first round. It was the appropriate whimper of an exit for a season that was underwhelming and not at all what everyone anticipated, that they go in and say, well, we kind of got to figure out what to do with this Patrick Beverley, Jay Crowder, Malik Beasley group, and to cycle those guys out into Gary Trent, DeLon Wright, and Torian Prince all at the minimum. You get younger, you get bigger, you get more athletic and more versatile, and you get either
probably better. Equivalent,
roughly equivalent shooting or better shooting. And you're surrounding Dame and Giannis with more shooting. I think this is it's disappointing to some degree from the Bucks' perspective. No, you're not going to add a Mikal Bridges. You're not going to add a Paul George. You're not going to find that next super, big home run swing. But given the restraints they had, I think their roster makes more sense now. I think they have a better, they've raised the ceiling of their roster. Gary Trent Jr., I think potentially, he's such an eye of the beholder player. Listen to Raptors fans, talk to people who covered the Raptors last season. I think they come away feeling kind of cold about whether he was ever at the potential that he could have reached. And some of that's surrounding context. Some of that is he was a consistent event creator on defense, getting steals, getting deflections, being a disruptive, gambler and really handsy, but locking into scheme, being a help side defender, being a disruptor on the ball, that wasn't always what he was able to do. So if he's able to play that kind of role, if Doc Rivers is able to get him to play equivalent quality of defense, but not gambling, that could be a huge win because 25-year-old shooters at this volume and that accuracy who can also help you defensively are super duper rare. I think if Gary Trent Jr. really was consistently at that level, he probably wouldn't have been available for the minimum. But as you say, he's one of those guys that slips between the cracks a little bit where in a different set of circumstances, he might have been a mid-level exception kind of guy. As teams keep holding on to those, knowing that you can use that as a trade exception heading into the season, he becomes somebody who starts scrounging around a little bit for a deal. Our boy Blake Murphy at Sportsnet had reported that there were multiple offers for Gary Trent at the taxpayer mid level, $5.2 million. He passed on those to take the minimum to go to Milwaukee because of the relationship with Dame and the opportunity to play on a winner. So he could, if he has a big season, he goes back into the market next year, maybe finds a friendlier, longer term deal. But in the short term, that becomes a big win for Milwaukee, who needs to get whatever firepower and athleticism and bolstering it can to keep up with the other teams at the top of the East.
Denver needs more firepower in their backup point guard slot, which they have left available and open ever since sending those 3 second-round picks to Charlotte during the draft to move off of Reggie Jackson's $5.2 million salary. Of course, we know that they have interest in Russell Westbrook. Nikola Jokic has interest in Russell Westbrook. That situation remains unresolved as the Clippers, you know, I was talking to someone about this one night in Summer League. There's definite still opportunity for the Jazz and the Clippers to figure out some type of sign and trade with Chris Dunn. And I know from past conversations that there was discussions of Russell Westbrook being the outgoing piece in whatever sign and trade machinations do come about, and then the Jazz would have waived him. That conversation was happening like day two of free agency. Right. So don't know what the exact holdups are. To be honest, I haven't really checked too much because it's not the biggest deal in the world, but that's just, you know, something that's out there. If the Nuggets don't end up being able to get Westbrook, there's still plenty of interesting point guards available on the market, most notably Tyus Jones. I think he's looking for much more than what Denver will be able to provide. And you've got some interesting potential minimum-y guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, Dennis Smith Jr. I mean, Markelle Fultz is still out there. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that I know of any potential connections there between those guys and Denver. I'm just saying the backup point guard market still seems to be quite rich in terms of optionality. So if I was a Nuggets fan, I would be feeling decent about our chances to add someone, you know, wake up one day feeling like a Bucks fan that has Gary Trent type thing.
I think the thing that's interesting to me about, well, first off, it's just you can read it if you want to as this is Michael Malone kind of thumbing his nose a little bit at the structure. Asked during the Summer League interview, what are the holes still on the roster? He right away says someone to play behind Jamal Murray. Calvin Booth's all over it. And what has Calvin Booth been doing? He moved the veteran point guard that Mike Malone played in all 82 games. Since they left the only other point guard on the roster being Jalen Pickett, who he drafted last year, as that kind of continual, we're moving off of the veterans, we're moving the young guys in, the young guys got to play. And Michael Malone's like, yeah, for sure. The other thing we need, though, is a guy to do what Reggie Jackson just did, somebody that I trust to come in and play that role. So it's interesting to me what if it's not Westbrook, who they would look to fill that role with, what kind of player, what level, you know, what age, how many years of service time, et cetera, that they would feel comfortable with Michael Malone actually playing. For Russ, I don't know. The fact that he has comfortably moved, or more comfortably at least, moved into the understanding of like, I'm coming off the bench. This is where I am in my career. I'm 35 years old. He started at the beginning of last season. It went awful for the Clippers. He famously said to Ty Lue, bring me off the bench. And then the Clippers found their footing and he found his comfort level, had some flashes. The jumper, the mid-range jumper that used to be cash is no longer. His long-range jumper was never really online, even though he took a bunch of them. The thing he can bring to a team now is rim pressure, still gets downhill a lot, can still drive and kick, make plays off the bounce. You could use that. I think Denver finished 29th in drives per game last season. So it's another guy who can break somebody down off the dribble and get to the rim. And attitude, I mean, I don't know if that sounds reductive, but this is a guy who is not going to be cowed by any moments, maybe moments that he should be cowed by it sometimes. But Denver is, they were a champion that wound up having their title defense cut early, and they got kind of punched in the mouth by the Wolves. And then they go and they lose an important piece of their starting five. They don't really replace anybody off the bench. The idea of maybe a little bit of snarl and swagger coming in the door might not be the worst thing in the world. So it's one of those squint. You got to squint to see the fit a little bit, I think. But I don't know if there's a dramatically better option at the price point that they're going to be able to get in the door. So it feels weird, the imagination of Russell Westbrook's going to be in Denver, but maybe, I don't know, stranger things have happened.
All right. Last item of five out. We're going to try to keep this as brief as possible. but Knicks owner Jim Dolan is big mad. He wrote a letter to the NBA's Board of Governors that he is not pleased that big market teams like the New York Knicks are continuing to have to share all the revenue with all the small teams at the big boy table. This was particularly the most interesting part about this was the RSN stuff.
Yes.
Being that, you know, Golden State is going to be, to my knowledge, in a similar predicament, let's say, where they have less games available for their local affiliate, NBC Sports Bay Area or Comcast, whatever the exact, I forget who the overlords are, all these companies are now, and more on national TV. Like the big teams, the Lakers, the Warriors, the Knicks get these massive local deals, which is such a contrast to, like, I think for an NBA perfect world, I think for like you and I perfect world and fans at home perfect world, with the influx of Amazon and whatever, like there would be an app or there'd be Amazon Prime or Apple TV where all the games are on it and you wouldn't need these guys anymore. But long-standing history of all that type of stuff, especially when you're a team like the Knicks who can generate, I don't know the exact numbers, but those teams can make well over $10 million a year annually in their broadcast rights, where certain smaller teams are only at like a couple million. Same thing with the jersey patch sponsors. So yeah, it's always just funny that like the Board of Governors is such a like clandestine thing. And it's just funny when an angry detail bubbles to the surface and gets obtained, leaked to certain people.
The interesting, I think you're right. I mean, well, there's the interesting component too, where James Dolan is just mad that the league is going to take home a bigger slice of the revenues, like whatever it was. It's going from like 0.5% of something to 8% of it. And like, why is the league office taking home more of this money? But you're right. I mean, the big thing, obviously, James Dolan, as you mentioned, MSG Networks is under the Knicks umbrella as a team that owns its own network. That's, you're taking money out of my pocket by trying to move to a more centralized model. I think the interesting thing to this, to me in this, and I would, the furthest thing from an expert on, you know, the broadcast model and how this all works, but a lot of this is stuff that was coming up last year in the last year and a half, 2 years in Major League Baseball, right? And our former colleague Hannah Kaiser had written about this a couple times last year about the bankruptcy of Diamond Sports Group, the Bally Sports Networks, all the local teams that had their local, or all the MLB teams that had their local deals with them, and Major League Baseball being like, well, our goal is to make it so that we are centralizing all this. And there was a quote that she had in one of those pieces from Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, before last season, quote, a more national product produces more centrally shared revenue, which reduces revenue disparity, which in turn we hope would reduce payroll disparities. And that's, I think, what James Dolan is.
Socialist pro sports leagues.
I know, imagine that. But I think it's also James Dolan, if you're James Dolan, you're saying, why do I care about payroll disparity? Like, I want to have the opportunity to A, make more money with my local deal, and also spend more if I want to spend more to win. Now, that runs contra to the new CBA environment that's cracking down on Steve Ballmer and is cracking down on the Warriors and whatever else. But I think what we're seeing is this is it's a disruption of the way that business has been done over the course of years. It's that hit one sport in a major way first. It's hitting this one now more. We're seeing more teams go to like free over the air TV, you know, like I think the Suns did it. The Bucks have done some of it. The Jazz, there's more teams, especially the ones that had those Bally deals. This stuff is not going away. And so James Dolan, you know, smacking the table and saying, you are taking money out of the pockets of those of us whose model does work and has worked, is, I think this might be the start of something as opposed to the end of something.
Yeah, which is really interesting because Adam Silver at his press conference post Board of Governors meeting on Tuesday in Las Vegas, he gets inevitably asked about the concept of expansion. And while he did say, of course, that the league is going to continue to consider that and blah, 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 this was the first time I've heard him in the last little stretch talk about, he put some type of doubt and some type of shadow on the concept because of this. He said, when you bring in new partners, you're diluting those payments, of course, to teams. Sometimes it seems as if we're printing money when we expand. Actually, it's no different than selling equity in any business. And that to me, an end quote, that to me was something I've never heard him suggest before. I still think that they are going to be looking at expansion very seriously. I think the talent level, because that's something he mentioned further, like you don't want to dilute the talent either. Like we've got so many good teams. I don't think that's going to be an issue, especially as we have a potentially loaded draft class coming around the corner as well. But yeah, maybe there won't be, you know, if these top tier owners right now are already, you know, shaking their fists at losing a couple shekels. Like I can only imagine how much that will hurt the wallets when you're turning a 30 team pie into a 32 team pie and everyone gets less of this new $74 billion deal that they just negotiated. So that I thought was pretty noteworthy that he showed some type of reticence to that, where in the past he kind of was like, it's, this has kind of been like an open secret. You know, there are people in the league who are like moving to Las Vegas because it's center located for a number of things, but also like, hey, it might not be bad if I'm already in the market or where the new team might be. Yeah. So, yeah. So before we take a quick break here, we just thought it'd be fun to play a quick little game. Expansion game. Dan and I, we know Vegas, we know Seattle, but let's just hypothetically say that those two situations don't work out. Dan and I came up with two silly responses for a location, a mascot name, and a local celebrity who will be part of the minority ownership group. So Dan, would you like to go first, or would you like me to regale my tales of expansion thoughts?
I want to hear yours first.
Okay, I didn't want Dan to know mine. So.
That's why I want to hear yours first. I did all my homework in the rundown.
That ridiculous. It's not that ridiculous.
Jake acted like he was like leaving breadcrumbs and clues. I'm like, brother, I am not solving your riddle. Just tell me the fucking thing on the show.
So we have to put a lockbox for spare key for our apartment in case like we get locked out. We have someone coming and we're not there.
Right.
We used to be able to keep it on the front doorstep. Like then the condo president got pissed off at lockboxes for whatever reason, thought they were unsightly, threatened to cut them down. So we had to move it like five buildings to the right on our street. Okay. Now I have a riddle version in my phone that I can send people if they'd like to solve the riddle, or I just give them the straight directions. So I just figured I would make that little tangent there.
Definitely what we were looking for in terms of making this game as quick as possible. So
you said riddle. quick. All right. I love Charleston, South Carolina.
Huh.
Got beaches, they've got sports, and very, very haunted town. The Charleston Ghosts are coming to spook the NBA with Danny McBride as the local minority owner.
That's very good. I love the idea of getting Danny McBride involved in any capacity. I also, there will be a little bit of connectivity between the Ghosts and my idea. I also want to take issue with you calling this a silly little exercise. I did some real research, Jake. I dug deep into the media market data. There is a top 30 media market and a top 10 television market area not represented in NBA ownership right now. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It has bounced back from deindustrialization.
I thought of Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Oh, well, one of us thought of it and one of us did it. All right. Tech money there, healthcare money there, education money there. Here's my pitch. One of two team names, all right? Going with your ghost idea, the Pittsburgh Zombies. There's where George Romero's from, all the, you know, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, can lean into the horror component of that. Or the very other end of the spectrum, the Pittsburgh Neighbors. Because you know who else was there? Mr. Rogers. That's right. Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, and his neighborhood from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's obviously no longer with us, so you can't get him to be the minority owner. Let's go with Wiz Khalifa, famed rap star, maybe celebrated author Michael Chabon. I'm not sure how you say his name, Chabon. And just as somebody to have around, Tunde Adebimpe, the singer from TV on the Radio, also from Pittsburgh. So that could be some celebrities that we've got in the mix there. The main reason I'm doing this, though, my friend Kristen, who is a listener to No Cap Room, shouts out to Kristen.
Shout out, Kristen.
She lives in Pittsburgh. She works for Fred Rogers Productions. She's a co-executive producer on their show, Don Quixote. And I want to be able to hook her up with tickets. Don Quixote. I swear to God, dude. if you any listeners out here, if you have small children,
that is fantastic.
Don Quixote, yellow donkey, purple mohawk, lives in somewhere else, I think is the name of the place from Fred Rogers. There's a whole bunch of Fred Rogers characters in there. It's a wonderful time. Children's programming, you gotta love it. Kristen works as a co-executive producer on it. I just want to hook her up with some season tickets. So we're gonna set up a team in Pittsburgh and we're gonna get Kristen out there and she's gonna hang out with, I guess, the guy from TV on the Radio. That's my pitch.
We're going to hook up Kristen with season tickets and we're going to hook up our listeners with a second half of this episode when we come back from an ad break and pay some bills. Thank you. Stay with us.
Welcome back to No Cap Room. My name is Dan Devine, and I'm talking now because Jake isn't, because Jake was in Las Vegas, and I'm here to set him up. He wasn't there to watch Bronny James play, although he certainly could do that. I was available to him.
I did watch.
I'm sure he did. Listen, I'm not sitting here trying to disparage Jake's ball watching or ball knowing. All I'm trying to say is that Jake was there for the conversations. The whole NBA, except for me, goes to Las Vegas, and he was out there trying to talk to coaches and front office members, people who were just looking for an insider to speak to late in the evening in Las Vegas. And who better to do it with than Jake Fisher, the people's insider? So I'm going to need you to tell me what you learned out there, Jake. Let's open up the people's notebook.
The people's notebook is full of a lot of disappointed agents and team executives with the new CBA ramifications. Yeah. The first thing, though, on Friday, the news broke of Jalen Brunson's extension that we discussed on last Thursday's episode of No Cap Room.
Yeah, you were ahead of the game on that one.
It seemed like something that was coming down the pipeline for a little while. Yeah. And a lot of people are making jokes about, Rick Brunson's about to become the most expensive, highest paid assistant coach in the league. Jokes, of course.
Jokes.
But one thing I wanted to say is that in talking to one particular person, when I was framing and phrasing it as Jalen took a pay cut, this one person suggested to me, well, look, he's in a very similar situation right now to where Isaiah Thomas was in Boston after his MVP vote finish.
Mm.
Says, I'm not taking the extension. I'm going to bet on myself and get the Brinks truck. And he never did. So locking in $156 million right now ain't exactly the most altruistic thing we've seen around these parts.
Sure.
And also, Brunson's in a far different circumstance than Isaiah Thomas was in Boston, being that he is not 5'2", but also that he has deep, deep, deep connections that we have discussed on the show and written in depth at Yahoo Sports about not just the Villanova teammates, but with front office structure, with Leon Rose and the close connections with Rick Brunson and his family and whatnot. So I'm not saying that he could, if he had a hip injury that he didn't get surgery for to play during the playoffs, that the Knicks are just going to turn around and trade into Cleveland for Kyrie Irving. But I just think I thought that was an interesting comparison that someone told me. So I don't know. I mean, aside from that, yeah. Like,
hang on, we're going to knock real loud on wood right here.
Do it.
Did you hear that on the mics? Yeah.
Hope so.
If I had salt, I'd be throwing it over my shoulder. Whatever. Yeah. No further injuries, please. The Jalen Brunson ending one season with a broken hand was plenty. That's no more of that. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, aside from that, look, like as we talked about with the Denver stuff, like there's still some dominoes to fall. There's still, the Brandon Ingram potential trade opportunity, the Larry Markkanen potential trade opportunity. None of that stuff seems particularly close. I do expect Utah to kind of take that all the way up to the August 6th, like we've been talking about here. The Pelicans and Brandon Ingram both like don't have any necessary incentive to like rush this thing forward if, depending on how things go, what have you. Which, I mean, kind of set the stage for most people and most conversations I had to drift into this new CBA. So I want to zero it in, though, particularly on Adam Silver, because I was very curious to ask him about what he was hearing from teams in advance of this offseason back at the finals. But shout out to PR czar of the league, Tim Frank, who did not give me an opportunity to ask it. But shout out now Mo Coyle, who gave me the opportunity to ask it this week.
There you go.
And we wrote all about it at Yahoo Sports about how, like, this is what the league wants, to what we were saying with the revenue sharing stuff with Dolan. They want the Clippers to have to make hard decisions. They want the Denver Nuggets to have to make hard decisions. They want all 30 teams in a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you know, Adam Silver thinking way to have a chance to win the title every year, which is not going to be the case anytime soon. But maybe it is 10 years from now. I don't know. We've got six different titles or six different champions in six different years. I think the most interesting thing that Adam Silver said, though, that I wanted to discuss in this space, because it was something we've talked about previously. After my question, the professor himself, Howard Beck of The Ringer, asked a great follow-up, which was my prepared follow-up if someone had asked me about the second apron stuff first. And Howard later said to me that my question was his first question and this question. So we were thinking of the exact...
Sure.
It made me feel very validated. Howard asked him about the difficulties of certain fans not being able to follow certain rules of all this shit,
because it's not for nothing. Some media members too, like, we're all learning this stuff kind of as we go along, and it's not all like supernatural. So we just talked about ghosts and zombies. It is not completely natural. We are learning as we go.
Yeah. Well, look, do you play Catan? Do you settle the land of Catan?
I have played it, but I wouldn't say that I'm like into it.
It's the best example, best analogy I have found for this.
Settlers of Catan, the resource management game.
Correct.
All right.
Something that I played aplenty in college that has ended several friendships that I witnessed. Not just for me, but, you know, the competitive nerd juices that are flowing out there. And there, one analogy I will say is there's a building card that the game supplies for every player. You know, how many resources you need to build a road, a settlement, a city, to get a development card. Some people don't play by looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people do. And as someone who was tasked with writing a what's the new second apron explainer, I still have to go back and look at the article I wrote to, like,
it's not, easy.
So, like, I understand why some people who don't do this for a living, especially people who do, could find these harder rules interesting, because there's like fun little, you know, nooks and crannies of this. Like, to me, in Catan, when you settle on a port, which is on the board, it's the exact same thing. You think of a port that collects goods and stuff.
At a place you could park a boat coming in off the water.
Exactly. So with your greater access to the resources, it allows you to trade only two of one resource for one, which the standard game allows you to trade four into the bank for one. And there's like a little fun skill there where, like, if you have a lot of cards in one hand to play, you can settle on the port and then use that port immediately to continue the rest of your hand. Similar to how, like, Golden State is able to get under the first apron, use the full mid-level to sign DeAnthony Melton and make other moves that allow you to go, that have you go back over the first apron kind of thing. So, like, if you like that stuff, great. But to Howard Beck's question,
can you guess what my thought and my follow-up is just like, how many people who watch the NBA and follow the NBA follow it so that they can be playing Settlers of Catan all the time?
Exactly. So Howard asks, are you concerned that fans might not be able to follow this with their calculators? Adam says, I would certainly say yes. Always try to find that balance that we want a system both that substantively serves its goals in terms of putting every team in a position to compete. But at the same time, you're right. We want it to be understandable for the fans and the media for that matter as well. And to our broadcasters as they're explaining it. Because quick pause. I could see some Tuesday night TNT broadcast completely botching why Golden State couldn't keep Klay Thompson and what have you and blah, blah, blah. Again, it's early deals in this deal. Silver continued. Early days in this deal. Man, I can't even read. The whole notion of a second apron, ultimately, by definition, it gets fairly complicated. Sometimes simple rules, while we'd all like to deal with that, the nuance is life is complicated and the systems become inherently more complicated. But we're paying a lot of attention to it, and we'll see. I think in the first instance, there's still a learning curve for our teams. Not that our teams didn't understand it, but when you see an actual operation, see how it's affecting general managers and their ability to move certain players, then it really begins to sink in. I think, like everything, we're in constant discussion with our terms, with our teams and the Players Association. And to the earlier question of, are we achieving the results that we set out to do? That was my question. So the other thing Howard followed up and asked Adam about afterwards, Silver said that there's going to be some type of quote unquote salary cap manager that they're going to put in the NBA app to like help the literacy of the fans. But I think the most important thing too to mention through all this is the very end of the quote. You know, we're always in discussion with the Players Association. If they want to, the league and the union at a certain point in time, I've been told, could decide to change all this shit tomorrow. I'm not saying they are. But after we get to the trade deadline, and that is something that I wrote about yesterday as well, and thinking that, you know, I heard from so many player agents that like, you don't want to get to free agency anymore. There used to be a thought of like, oh, well, we could take a discount, shorter deal, and we'll get right back out there on the open market and get more. That didn't work for Gary Trent. It didn't work for Caleb Martin. It didn't work for Buddy Hield. It didn't work for keep going down the list of guys who are still available. It's not going to work for Tyus Jones, you know, what have you. Agents now want to get their guys traded first to a situation that they have some type of knowledge are looking to reward said player with an extension. You want to circumvent free agency altogether now. So I do wonder if we get to a point 2-3 years down the road that there are more conversations to kind of alleviate some of these pressures and whatnot. Because there are, you know, higher luxury tax payments and whatever, but I do think that one cap guy told me that the first apron might even be more of a challenge than the second. Everyone's so concerned about the second apron, freezing picks, what have you. The fact that now, if you are a tax team, you can't take back any more than a dollar. You can't take a dollar. It has to be 100%. You can't take more than 100% of the salary that you're sending out.
Yeah, it's got to match dollar for dollar. Whatever you're sending out, that's the only amount you can take back. You can't go over that at all.
In certain circumstances in the past, you were able to go up to 125%. So like if you want to trade a $17 million player for someone who made 18.7 roughly, like you were fine. Now you can't. And if you can't aggregate salaries together to make that match, like it's going to be really interesting to see. Like this was the first case study of free agency. I'm very curious to see it from December to February. I'm curious now if we'll see more teams. This is something I spitball with a couple of people. I'm curious if we'll see more activity at the December 15th window, where maybe some teams will be doing more things to get their own version of the quote unquote human trade exception that, you know, Philly signed that contract with KJ Martin to get him at $8 million and Josh Okogie at $8 million. Detroit kind of did the same by waiving Paul Reed. He's a trade chip now. Like, I do wonder if teams will be trying to get like that type of movable deal in the door early to potentially still retrade that guy. And I'll just be curious to see what ultimately comes from all this stuff, from a potential opportunity to like renegotiate moving forward. Because right now there's plenty of people who do not like this.
Yeah. And just to clarify, when you say human trade exception, that's like, you know, Rashawn Holmes, they decline his deal, but then re-sign him for two years at whatever, 24 or something like that. And then the second year of the deal is partially guaranteed, or like the Josh Okogie deal on the market, he probably wouldn't have gotten $8 million someplace, but now that provides an $8 million tradable salary for the Suns to use. Same deal with KJ Martin in Philly. Like, it's a way to maximize your potential trade return for a team that otherwise is like strapped up against the cap. So that's good for those guys that wind up getting a significant financial windfall. But is that, you know, letter of the law, spirit of the law, what you were looking to achieve with some of these systems? I think that the unintended consequences of this always come out down the line. We see, you know, the system was changed intending to do X, and then teams and agents and whoever else figure out how to do Y and Z, right? And that's totally. That's the way that all says, I mean, you give people rules to a game, they're going to figure out how to juke, how to maximize what they can do within those rules. I think the interesting thing to me from the fan perspective is, you just mentioned, is December 15th, which is the date where contracts signed in free agency, a lot of them can first become movable. Like a guy you signed in July, could you now trade him? Like that's the earliest date that those things can happen. If that becomes a bigger source of activity or locus of activity, does that detract interest around the trade deadline because more of the moves already happened? And then people wind up going like, trade deadline was kind of a bust. Or if more deals are happening because you allowed teams to negotiate with their outgoing players at the end of the finals, does June 30th and July 1st become kind of a bust? And if you make more deals happen in, you know, August or heading into a training camp in September, does that make, you know, like these things that have been tent poles that fans have gotten excited about and focused all their attention and interest on, if you defray those by moving them further out and into different places, does it wind up sapping some of the interest or the excitement out of what you've set up over the years? So I don't know. I think it's interesting to, I can understand the general idea of in the vein of making this make the most money for as many people as possible and slicing up this larger and larger pie that the NBA has because there's more revenue coming in, we're implementing more and more arcane rules for it to try to make the gameplay more manageable in whatever way. And just, I don't think that's what people are here for. I don't think, and I think the further away you make it get from what somebody is like, I like watching the team play and I want to find out how we get better guys on the team I like, I think you run the risk of alienating a large amount of your fan base. The thing that I kept thinking about as you're using Catan as a metaphor, a completely reasonable metaphor, and as you're talking about,
there's a reason why I use that one. Yeah.
And as you're talking about, you know, Adam's response to these questions, like it's the Kevin Durant tweet and not that Kevin Durant tweet or that Kevin Durant tweet or that Kevin Durant tweet, but the one where he said, you know, who the fuck want to look at graphs in the hoop conversation? And obviously, like, that was about a different thing. But I think the more this becomes about how you understand aprons, the further it gets away from that. And I wonder if that's something that eventually the NBA will come to rue. But maybe they'll be ruining it while counting Scrooge McDuck vaults worth of money, so it won't matter too much. Yeah. Is Scrooge McDuck vaults too washed a reference? Is that too old-timey and washed up a reference? Should I go with something different?
I got it.
And you're young and cool, so yeah.
Now I'm 30.
30.
I had some people saying, oh yeah, you're like 24, right? I was like, excuse me, I'm 30 now. And they're like, oh wow. Well, one counterpoint to everything you just said and everything we've been complaining about is that, if anything, the NFL salary cap and like how the trade commodity valuations work, no one gives a fuck about or knows anything about. I, as a diehard Eagles fan, don't know how these weird, oh, we can super load a signing bonus to lower the cap hit and the third round pick.
Yeah.
Linebacker is all of a sudden our best player, but we just trade a amazing wide receiver for a seventh round, like, and it's still popular. Probably has something more to be said.
I mean, the NBA doesn't have hitting, and not that kind of hitting. And the NBA has 66 more games in a year, where all the games mean a lot less. And the when the 6 month or the whatever the 6 month
regular season aside,
I understand chasing the NFL, but you know, you can't make an apple into an orange, no matter how much money the orange makes. I don't know. It's like,
but you can make apple juice if you're looking at the orange making all this orange juice and everyone's liking drinking it.
Yeah, if you squeeze the life out of it.
Let's finish things up with just a quick check back on our guys we were excited to watch at Summer League. I'm going to start because mine's quicker, because Zach Edey has not played a game in Las Vegas. I don't want to say the delight, because Kristen Peek told me as much as she has hated on Zach Edey. She is rooting for his success. She wants him to prove him wrong. But this has proved one part of her analysis correct so far, in that she was worried about how his body would be holding up at this type of speed and this type of physicality that happens at the NBA level. And this is not even the NBA level yet. And after an ankle sprain, he's been out for four straight games now. So that was a bummer. I wanted to see the Jolly Giant out there setting screens. Anthony Black, my boy with the Orlando Magic, my Magic, a pretty, I'd say, mediocre showing. I only watched one half of him in person, and I had to leave because I was disappointed and sad. And then I found out from someone else that he played much, much better in the second half. But total finishes after two games with 12.5 points per game, shooting 50% from the field. Only 1 of 4 from three total, which was probably the thing we wanted to see most
out
of him.
Numbers. You got to get those numbers up.
Yeah. 4.5 assists. So I still believe in you, Anthony Black, but I wanted more. I wanted more. Dan, what did you see from your guys?
Well, first off, I just want to say the Grizzlies continue to maintain that Edie's ankle soreness is a minor thing. So hopefully this is just abundance of caution.
And allegedly he can still come back at some point and play.
Yeah,
in Vegas.
So hopefully this is just abundance of caution from a team that saw every single player on the roster, you know, lose a limb last year. So hopefully that's it. My guys, Rokas Jakubaitis with the Knicks, the point guard, played all right. He's, I think, about 9 points, 3 assists in 16.5 minutes a game. He's 12 of 17 from the field. So that's good. 70% shooting. He'll take that. But he's been backup point guard after being, you know, like a star level player in Barcelona and Europe. He's come over and he's been backing up Tyler Kolek, their second round pick at point guard. So, and Tyler Kolek has gotten a lot more minutes, gotten a lot more burn, just had a game winner against the Kings, I believe, the other night. So Rokas, it's like, is it happening or is it not happening? He talked with Stefan Bondi of the New York Post, who had reported that there's been no word about from the Knicks, good or bad, about their appetite for signing Jokubaitis to an NBA contract. He's apparently in conversations with Žalgiris, I don't know how you pronounce it, but team in Lithuania, EuroLeague power that is in his home nation. So it's TBD as far as whether he comes over and stays here, but not acquitted himself poorly, just hasn't burst clear.
Yeah, let me just say, when we talked about him last time, I said, yeah, the Knicks, you know, they had clear emphasis on wanting to find another backup point guard because they're looking at Deuce McBride as more of a combo guard. I completely forgot to mention in there that they sent three future second-round picks to trade in to go specifically target Tyler Kolek and have very high hopes for Tyler Kolek.
Yeah.
And he has arguably been the most impressive player in all summer league with how he just plays at his own pace, man, and he keeps his dribble active, and he's always got a passing lane that he's keeping in the back of his mind or in the corner of his eye. And I really liked how he's so deferential in a good way. Like, he really made sure that Jacob Toppin got going in their first game, and then he's kind of spreading his wings a bit more scoring wise throughout, you know, each game here. He was impressive. He was as impressive as I think he could have been, being that he was someone who many people thought could have been picked between like 18 and 30 and wasn't going to even be there in the second round. And he's proven right now that he probably should have gone in that range. At least it's early, but at least at this juncture.
Yeah, the table setting, I think everybody expected to be there. You're looking for a little more aggressiveness in terms of shot creation, just because you got to have that to be a contributing point guard at the NBA level. More aggressiveness, more scoring, more attack in the last couple of games. So it's what you like to see. The Knicks also, since we had that conversation, signed Campaign on the minimum. So they're more backup ball handlers there, although Campaign might just be sort of a vibes guy looking to dance on the bench and celebrate with Mikal Bridges. So
the handshakes that Campaign is going to come up with all the Villanova boys is going to be a sight to behold.
Also a sight to behold, professional segue, professional broadcasting. Brandon Miller in his one game against those New York Knicks in summer league. I had said, all I'm looking for Brandon Miller is come out and look really, really good and prove to everybody that you don't need to play here more. Job well done. I think it was 23 points, 8 rebounds, 5 of 10 from three, hit some pull-ups, set behind screens and knocked some down. They win. They beat the Knicks in that game, and the Hornets said, you know what, we're all done here. We've seen what we need to see. And we can focus our attention elsewhere. You know, Nick Smith Jr. gets some more run. Their rookie, who you're going to have to help me with the name, Tijan Salon.
Pretty close.
Yeah. Pretty close. All right. Well, I'll get, you know, it's summer league for all of us. Yeah, we'll get there.
I don't know the 100% pronunciation, but I would have said TJ and Salwan. So there you go.
There you go. So we'll work on that. Apologies.
I know Salwan is definitely the correct. Because okay. People, everyone in the league pre-draft, even some people in Charlotte, were calling him Saloon. I was looking at his spelling. I was like, why is everyone saying Saloon? And then the league sent out their pronunciation guy like that week, and it was Salwan. So there you go.
Well, there you go. So they have, there are more players to get some more reps and to get some more eyeballs on. Brandon Miller, did what he needed to do and moved on from there. Charlotte embraces its rebuild. He is a clear, important part of that. Thank you for instead of me picking a player and then him not playing, me picking a player yes. And then he plays the one game that he needs to, and then gets out. Efficiency. We love to see it.
There you go. Let's get out of here.
Dan, yeah, buddy.
Thank you for everything today. Thank you to super producer John Gennaro, who does all the things to make this show look and sound great, even through incredible technical difficulties
that magically
none of you are even going to know about, because that's what John does.
Smooth.
Subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube to keep hearing perfectly smooth and well-produced episodes on whatever podcast platform you're currently listening on, and leave us a 5-star review. That would be great. We thank you for listening, and we'd appreciate it if you came back again next week for another episode of No Cap Room.